Well, lots happening in the world of cyber. Of course, the elections as well locally. Part of another Spotlight segment. Always great to have him back. His name is Jack Harrington. He is running for supervisor in the town of Brookhaven. He's a top flight attorney in the world of cyber for our good friends over at CMM. That means Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Bit of a switcheroo here, but we love having Jack, Joe in. We'll have Joe in next week. Campo, Jack, how are you?
I'm well, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, it was nice to hear the Yankees win, but I got to say, I've been most excited. My 1-5 Giants finally got off the schneid. I couldn't even see the game. I was away with the Navy this weekend, but I was so pleased to hear that they finally broke through without all the star receivers. You know, you figure all this money, and then they all break down, and that's when we get the win.
Who would have thunk it? You know, 0-5, decimated, yep. No Odell. The coach has lost the team. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie taken off his pads. He's gone.
Yep.
I mean, the team is a mess. Who's playing offensive line? I don't even know anymore. And all of a sudden, they go into the toughest place to play in the league in Denver, Mile High City, and pull out an unbelievable win.
And this is when we're going to do it. 10-0 run. Here we go.
I agree with you.
We're going to sneak into the playoffs.
You want to know the irony? We'll win the next 10. I'm not kidding. We'll go 10-0, 11-5, we'll miss the playoffs.
You think so? It's
happened before. 11-5 teams have missed.
All I know is that in my household, my wife, University of Tennessee graduate, we got Alabama this weekend. And Tennessee's not having a great season. Yeah. She's been upset about that, and I don't think that she's going to be any happier when – Tennessee goes up against the Tide.
So some tough games. I love watching some of this SEC action, though. I mean, it's incredible stuff.
It's great. We're actually, after the campaign, I promised my wife, we're going to go down to Knoxville. We're
going
to go down to Knoxville to see her side of the family. A lot of them still live down there. We haven't been down in a while with everything going on up here. And we are going to the LSU-Tennessee home game,
man,
at Neyland Stadium. It's going to be fantastic. These college games, people up in the Northeast don't realize it. You know, there's over 100,000 capacity at these big Southern football stadiums. It just shuts down the entire state on game day.
We saw Notre Dame at MetLife last year when they played Boston College. That was great. We might go down there, by the way. We might go down to Miami to see Notre Dame-Miami. That's November the 11th. Might have to have that on the – we're working on it. We're working on it with family members, with tickets and everything else there. So much has happened. We'll talk about the campaign in a second. We talked a lot about cyber last time. International still plays a big role. A lot of things that we have to look at here from an international point, huh?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is something that we've seen at Campolo, Middleton, McCormick is, you know, my background, before I came to the firm, I worked for one of the big firms in D.C. and on Wall Street. And, you know, we dealt with a lot of Fortune 100 cross-border clients. When you come back out, even smaller clients out on Long Island, it's my firm belief that there's no such thing as a purely domestic, unless you're selling lemonade on the side of a street, there's no such thing as a domestic company anymore. There's always some international touch point, whether you're sourcing something from overseas, selling a product overseas, and anytime a business has to cross borders one way or another, there is a whole mess of laws and regulations that companies have to deal with. And what I've been finding is that a lot of companies don't know what they don't know, and they're sort of trying to break into the overseas market, and they're not sure where the pitfalls are, where the minefields are. And so that's something that we've been working with companies out here on Long Island more and more in the past couple of years since I joined, and I'm actually chairing the International Regulatory and Enforcement Group at Campolo. So we have a lot of – we're very busy in that area.
Wow, that is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, the intricacies of the laws and everything else from overseas has to be mind-boggling for many here.
It's tough. I mean, it's hard enough to figure out everything that you have to do domestically, right? To say nothing of the fact that each foreign country has its own set of laws that businesses doing business over there have to comply with. But, you know, it's a great example. We've been talking a lot about the Iran deal right now at the national level. Yep. And, you know, setting aside the foreign policy, you know, trade. You know, there are certain countries that you simply, as a United States business, cannot do business with for very good reasons. There's a lot of different types of products and services that you cannot sell to different parts of the world. And it's very, very detailed analysis to figure out what, you know, I've got a widget. Does that, you know, impact one of the, you know, dozens of different regulatory regimes in the United States? So
incredible.
Helping companies sift through all that is something that's very important, because the consequences of getting caught out are, you know, potentially business ending for some of these firms.
Oh, no question about it. It's going to be mind-boggling. And, you know, when you think about the whole international situation with China, what's happening there, and the TPP and everything else with the president, NAFTA, you know, I mean, there's so many moving parts right now that you really have to keep on top of.
It's exceptionally complex, you know, and for 50 years, the United States has been at the center of sort of setting the world order, whether it's from a trade perspective, a military perspective, an economic perspective. I'm a little concerned that I see us receding from that lead role in the world. But, you know, setting that aside, there, you know, we've got, you know, the Chinese are being very aggressive in terms of their international outreach. One of the things that I work on is something called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Which basically is a United States law that was passed after the Watergate scandal, which says, in a nutshell, U.S. businesses conducting business overseas cannot engage in bribery of foreign officials to get a business advantage. And that's something that we're seeing a lot of U.S. companies, particularly when they're operating in China, really getting caught out by the Justice Department, both under the Obama administration and now under the Trump administration. And companies have to be very, very careful because business norms, the way things are conducted, vary from country to country. But U.S. companies, or if you're a company listed on a U.S. stock exchange, you have to abide by the U.S. laws regardless of where you're doing business. So even a company here on Long Island got caught out just this year in terms of an investigation into alleged practices of bribery. We saw it with Walmart, spent hundreds of millions of dollars in connection the past couple of years with allegations that they were bribing Mexican officials to rapidly expand. Small amounts of money, but getting environmental regulations, sort of greasing those skids in terms of getting their brick-and-mortar shops up. So one of the things that I really like doing, and I had the chance to do it with some of our clients, and even in Mexico this year, is going out, training these U.S. businesses that want to operate overseas on, you know, how to make sure that they are above board when it comes to, you know, complying with the FCPA or similar laws overseas.
Incredible stuff. You know, when you think about it, the mindset when you have the administration currently here and some of the practices that have been about, you know, in the last 10 or 11 months, you wonder where the business situation is placed right now as far as overseas and allies and everything else. China, with President Xi, he's butted heads with the administration. We know that on the same page, pretty much, we hope, as far as North Korea is concerned. But certainly, this has been a different type of regime right now. And you wonder, as successful as one has been in the past, you wonder how much maybe it has dipped as far as just overall wanting to do business with the United States and vice versa. There's a lot of walking on eggshells, I would think, based on some decisions over the past few months. You'd have to think that way.
Sure, sure. I mean, and look, there's, you know, businesses and countries have so many different options now that they didn't have 10, 15, 20 years ago. You see the rise not only of China's economy, but India's economy. You know, after the Asian financial crisis in the mid-90s, a lot of the Southeast Asian economies are now bouncing back. And you've got a place like Africa, which is an enormous market, which the Chinese have been very aggressive in, particularly in the oil and gas sector. So you see, you know, I taught at Stony Brook University. I was an adjunct professor in their MBA program, and I taught a course on national security, foreign policy, and international business, and how all those things intertwine. And for China, you know, their overseas business interests are completely aligned with their foreign policy. They view these things as one and the same. And the economic power that large countries have is something that they can either use to their advantage or not use. And we need to make sure from a U.S. foreign policy standpoint that not only are we, you know, the leader from a military standpoint, which we are, but we are taking a lead when it comes to the international economy. And I think we need to be at the center of that into the future. And American business needs us to be at the center of that because we are that brand ambassador for the U.S. businesses operating in different parts of the world.
No question. You know, when we talk about the Iran agreement and the decertifying of it, according to the president last Friday, and hearing that many of our allies are not really backing the decertification, you wonder how that will play into other areas, such as doing business
in
general, as far as this country is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is going to make other countries and foreign corporations
think twice
about, what can we trust, what can't we trust? You know, who is actually setting policy? Is it coming from a tweet? Is it coming from the State Department? Is it coming from the Department of Commerce? I think there is a lot of confusion, unfortunately, in the international community as to what it is the United States is trying to achieve these past 9 months when it comes to our foreign policy. And any businessman will tell you the one thing that they don't like is uncertainty. So we absolutely, I think, need to have a much more coherent message at the national level when we're talking about what the United States' interests are overseas. And quite frankly, there was actually an interesting piece in today's New York Times column by Thomas Friedman, basically talking about, you know, the sort of punter in chief. There's the one overarching strategy seems to be, you know, we're going to break things down from the past and we're going to have somebody else try to fix it. In this case, punting it over to Congress to ultimately make a decision. And I think regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, the presidency is not just a set of policies. It's a continuation. It's a stewardship from one administration to another. And I think you'll find people of both parties being very critical of this president in terms of his, you know, willingness to very, very quickly throw the baby out with the bathwater and destroy any sort of international agreements that previous presidents, not only President Obama, but President Bush, have made on behalf of our country.
No question, which sometimes makes you think about transitioning in a proper way where, again, you know, it's not an all of a sudden move where, you know, it creates a lot of red flags. And sometimes that could be a real negative as far as an effect is concerned, something that we're seeing now in a couple of different areas.
Yeah, no. And, you know, just bringing it back to the businesses here on Long Island, you know, we need to, you know, businesses want to know that they've got, again, a stable regulatory regime, particularly for those businesses who are trying to set out, because it's scary to go overseas. But when you think about where the market opportunity growth is, we talk about the need for more manufacturing. My grandfather worked at Northrop Grumman. People talk about manufacturing on Long Island being dead. I don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot of particularly smaller companies that are really trying to make it work, and those are the good-paying middle-class jobs. One of the things that they need to know is that they've got an overseas market for the great high-quality products that they're going to make here on Long Island, and then that market is stable, and that the regulations and the laws that they need to consider when doing business overseas are not going to be subject to whims, that there is going to be some constancy, some permanence to those. So this is, you know, this is national policy that affects people down at the local level.
Now, two quick ones here locally. It was kind of alarming. We spoke about it earlier this morning regarding taxes and everything else as far as the state of New York and doing business here, with New York really ranking at the bottom, 49th out of 50th, I believe, Jersey being 50th. Does it bode well? Is there any silver lining as far as correcting this? Can we do things that will make businesses prosper here, will make companies want to stay here, maybe others from leaving and going elsewhere? Do you think there could be a silver lining somewhere here?
Yeah, I mean, look, New York has, Long Island in particular, in my view, obviously having been born and raised here and loving this community, but New York generally has a lot of assets, even though our taxes are high. And look, anyone who tells you that we are going to go from the second highest to the second lowest in a couple of years is simply lying to you. That's never going to happen. But we've got intellectual and financial assets here in New York State that other states simply cannot duplicate. At the end of the day, we are the financial capital of the world. We're certainly the financial capital of this country. And whether it's access to startup capital, whether or not it's access to world-class universities, scientific institutions like Brookhaven National Laboratory out here in Brookhaven Town, that's something that other states cannot compete with, even if they can compete on a tax level. Now, I will say this, you know, we need to be looking for ways to cut costs. Absolutely. We need to find ways to lower taxes, not only on businesses, but on, you know, on property owners, obviously. But we can be doing things from a structural level at the town to simplify things like the zoning and land use and permitting process. There was an article in Newsday two months ago, where they were talking to 11 national retail chains talking about why they did not want to come to Long Island. And one of the reasons that was cited in the Newsday article was the fact that, you know, in another state, it may take them 3 months to go from concept to putting a shovel in the ground, whereas in certain municipalities on Long Island, it's going to take them 3 years to go from concept to shovel in the ground.
Yeah, and because there's just so many categories for one to kind of get through in order to put that shovel in the ground, right? It's yeah. it's not an easy task to try and get through the different areas of as you say, each municipality has its own ways of doing things.
Got their own ways of doing things, their own, you know, their own verbiage. Obviously, you got to interface with the county. I mean, we really need to be looking at this with a white piece of paper. Yeah. This is something I know we're sort of straying into the campaign here a little bit, but this is something that, that I've been calling for, is we need to completely reevaluate the way in which the zoning, land use, permitting process is done. We need to start with a white piece of paper. And we can't be afraid to say, just because we've been doing something one way
right.
for however many years we've been doing it, that it's the correct way.
Yeah.
So I'd like to bring businesses, environmental advocates, unions, and town officials together to come up and say, should we reevaluate top to bottom the way in which we handle land use, zoning, permitting, to see if we can make it more efficient and more understandable for
yeah,
people.
No question. We had the county executive in the studio the other day, Steve Malone, and you know he's very positive about, you know, you have the Ronkonkoma Hub, you have the
sure.
Heartland Square Project, you have, you know, Amazon's second headquarters maybe looking to go somewhere. That'd be great if we can get them here over at Heartland, right? 50,000 jobs. What an injection that would be into this economy.
I would love to see Amazon come to Long Island in one of the proposed sites. I don't think, as much as I would love to see it, I don't think it's going to happen in the Brookhaven proposed site out in the Mastic-Shirley area. I did just see, I think yesterday, that it looks like New York City may be on the short list for Amazon. I don't know where that information is being sourced from. But at the end of the day, we need to look at the Amazon RFP as an opportunity. Every state in the country should look at it as an opportunity to self-evaluate, to look in the mirror and say, all right, Amazon has laid out
right.
the things that they want, the things that they need, an educated workforce check, you know, but investments in infrastructure, transportation, and again, the ease of doing business with a municipality is something where we're lacking. So let's take this opportunity to reform, even if we don't get the Amazon project, so that we are poised to get the next one and the one after that. Because you're absolutely right, we need jobs here. We need them across Long Island. We certainly need them in Brookhaven Town. And unless we are willing to reform, we are never going to bring companies back out here.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, we talk about all the time, keeping young people here. It's on everybody's short list as far as, you know, sure. what to do if elected. And that's one of the things. You got to have some of these major companies here so that kids after college will stay here and be able to thrive and build just as their parents have done and everything else. But you have to have companies stay here.
You have to have companies stay here. You know, none of this can be done on the back of public sector employment. You know, jobs are created primarily by the private sector. And we need to recognize that. And I hope both parties realize that Long Island's long-term success hinges upon our ability to convince companies that this is still a place to invest for the future, that we've got these remarkable assets, whether they be universities or, you know, it's still a beautiful place to live. People want to live here. So they'll certainly be able to attract the workers, but we have to be aggressive going after businesses and bringing
no
them out.
No question
here.
About it. We're talking with Jack Harrington. Jack, of course, is with all his other duties with CMM and everything else he's doing. He happens to be vying for a coveted post, which is the town of Brookhaven supervisor. We talked to you last time. You're getting out. You're knocking on doors left and right. Give me a little bit of the reaction since we've seen you last. We're under the 3-week mark now.
I know, 20 days.
Can you believe it?
Believe me, my wife's got the countdown on the calendar. That's for sure.
I want my husband back.
No, it's brutal, and I will say for anyone anyone who's thinking about getting involved in any level of elected office, I think it's something that we need more young people in particular, but people across the board to be more engaged civically. It's a slog. It is an absolute slog, but it's worth it. Not only have I gotten to get to know the town that I was born and raised in a whole heck of a lot better than I ever did. But, you know, when you're out there knocking on doors or going to these civic association meetings, you're really getting a pulse of what the issues are. And I've been buoyed because I feel like what we are talking about in terms of economic development and job creation really yeah. is what is on everybody's mind. And that is really the primary concern. Certainly there are other issues, but yeah. that is something that we've been focused on. And so we've been getting great feedback.
Are you learning more about the ins and outs of basically a campaign? I mean, it's got to be incredible, right? Like a roller coaster. You know, there are good days and bad days. But have you learned more? I mean, let's face it, this is your first real run here at a coveted
position.
Yeah,
my first run for anything.
Right.
You know, I've always been someone who's been politically engaged in terms of, ideas and policies and trying to stay abreast of what's going on in my community. But that is a completely different animal from having your name on the ballot. It's something I'm very proud to have my name on the ballot this November. I'm the sort of guy who never missed an election when it came to voting. But, you know, it is. It's, you know, there's a certain, you know, you don't think about all the work that goes into it. One of my running mates on the town slate, Cindy Morris, is very fond of saying, you know, there's my name on the ballot, and then there's 500 people whose name should appear underneath me. And whether it's, you know, the people on my staff, all the fantastic volunteers that we have coming in, day out to help knock on doors and make phone calls, it's a huge operation. Hopefully we're gonna keep pushing to the end.
Awesome.
You can hang on by your fingernails for 20 days if you have to, and we're gonna give it our best shot here.
There you go, and we stress people to go out and vote and really,
absolutely,
you know, do your due diligence, no question about it. Before we let you go, Jack is going to be a father again, third
yes.
trimester. Give us an update.
We're there. Sarah's
January,
Sarah's good.
Right?
You know, it's baby's coming in January. So once the campaign is over, we're going to go back spending a little more quality time. God bless my wife. She has been the rock. I can't imagine how she's doing this with me gone every night. Because last time when she was pregnant with our son, Jack Jr., you know, she didn't have a toddler to run after,
right, now.
She does. So not only is she more tired, she's got a full-time job. She has a part-time business, and now she's, you know, she's really bearing the heavy burden. My family's been helping out, but honey, if you're listening, I love you and thank you for everything that you've been doing.
How about that? Jack Harrington, great stuff there. And hopefully the Giants get another win.
Oh, God, please.
10 in a row, remember, 10 in a row, 11-5. That's the goal. Still may not make the playoffs. We'll see what happens. Always great to see you.
Thank you,
Jack.
Good luck
with
everything. Great to see you, too.
Down the run here, stretch run, Election Day, of course, less than 30 days. Really, when you think about 2 weeks from this coming Tuesday.
That's right. Get out to vote, everybody.
Get out and vote.